from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We love that you're here with us tonight. You can join the conversation by going to facebook.com/themusicrowshow, or you can also hit us up on Twitter as well. Because we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. So, Hino, who's sitting here with us tonight?
Seriously?
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead. I'm gonna go take a break.
You're gonna go take a break. Wow. How long have you been doing this? It's amazing.
Theater of the mind.
That's right.
Mindless.
All right. Well, we do have a great guest here this hour. We've got James House in the studio with us. He's a hit songwriter and hit recording artist. He's originally from Sacramento, California. He's got a pretty darn interesting resume, I think. Recording artist with hits like This Is Me Missing You, Don't Quit Me Now, and Little by Little. And as a songwriter, he's had hits like Ain't That Lonely Yet for Dwight Yoakam, In a Week or Two for Diamond Rio, Broken Wing for Martina McBride. But wait, there's more. He was a rocker in a band like Prisoner. That was one of his first bands. And his current band, the Troubadour Kings. And he's a record label exec with a brand new record label called Victor House Records. And he's even a vocal coach, having coached Dustin Hoffman in the movie Ishtar. I mean, that's a resume right there. And now,
I did all that.
19 years after its release, check this out, 19 years after its release, This Is Me Missing You just hit number one on the English dance charts. So I think we got a few things to talk about. James House, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That sounded kind of like your eHarmony profile.
I don't know. Yeah, I left off the long walks on the beach part, yeah.
James is a Scorpio. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me tell you, this Troubadour King stuff is killer.
Right. Thank
you
so
much. I've
been
listening to it. It's fantastic. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. I got some great friends in that. I mean, great. There's Michael Bradford is part of that, and Lou Toomey. So that makes it all much more fun there. So
It's killer stuff. Let's start at the beginning here, if we can. I'd love to talk about growing up musically and your dad and your uncles. And there was a lot going on there musically there within your household.
Yeah, that was the first music I heard. Was this cowboy music they used to sing. It was Sons of the Pioneers type of stuff, four-part harmony.
Oh, really?
So it was just wonderful. It was a very musical house to grow up in. And everybody, and then as we got older, everybody had their records they liked. And so we'd all fight for time on the turntable back then. And, you know, my dad would say, no, yeah, listen to Bing Crosby. And we'd say, hey, listen, these Beatles are pretty good. And so it was a real good musical family, and it still is, you know. So
did they were they doing this four-part, the Sons of the Pioneer type stuff?
Right.
Were they doing it? Were they gigging with
it? Oh, yeah, they were actually on it. There was back then, it was a show called the Arthur Godfrey Show,
yeah,
which was kind of like the American Idol, you know, the Idol show of today.
Right.
And actually won it, and they were real singing cowboys. They all lived on a ranch. At one point, everybody was on one ranch in Bly, Oregon, all four families. In fact, my mother tells a story that my dad and my uncles were off singing. I think they were in New York at the time. And they had four houses on there. And, you know, and they all had little kids each. And they were a bit afraid. It, you know, it was out in the country.
Right.
So one night, my mom and my aunt Kay were in the house. And the door handle started turning. This is late at night. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And the door handle's turning slowly, and they're getting very nervous. And over the mantle, just classic as an old 440 Winchester rifle. And so my mom's going, Kay, get the rifle down. You don't get it. So my Aunt Kay gets it, and my mom's holding, I think, my brother and one of the kids back, and they're holding them. You know, they give it the old, Winchester rifleman, cock. And they're ready to shoot. They don't want to shoot through the door, but they're getting really close to it. So I go, open it, just see what it is. I'll open it. And so my mom says, I'll open it. And if somebody's there, you can take them now. They open the door real quick, and it was a cow.
Oh.
Licking on the handle. I guess getting the salt off the, so anyway.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's my dad. So, you know, when they came back, they said, you guys got to stay home. So eventually they they came off the road, and at that point they all had four or five kids each. So they ended up, you know, staying home with us. So
come home, we were almost mugged by a heifer.
I think that might be the title to your next album right there.
I got more to that song already.
Oh, that's funny. So, but when you started playing out and doing music on your own, you kind of veered a little bit more toward the rock side of things. What?
Yeah, you know, it was this hybrid of, you know, like I said, there was a lot of music in the house. And so I had the cowboy music of my dad, my uncles, and my mother was from Oklahoma. And that side of the family loved Buck Owens and Merle Haggard. I mean, they must have played Bucks live at Carnegie Hall. You could pretty much time their Saturday nights by a Buck Owens record.
Wow.
You know, they were pretty young at that point. So they all of us kids would be in a bedroom and hear, "Love's Gonna Live Here." And, you know, they'd all be dancing and stuff. And,
that was good.
And then they'd fight a little bit and you'd hear them, you know, out there. "I've got a tie." And they'd be fighting out there. "Oh, yeah." And we were like, "Oh, they're going to get divorced or something." Like that. And then you'd hear, "Together Again." We're like, "Okay, everything's right."
Okay.
And that was every Saturday night. But
wow.
So between that music and growing up on the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and the blues records, I loved it. I just have a love for all of it. And
yeah.
I was, you know, blessed with this, or cursed with this voice that has fun. So I love singing country and I love singing rock blues. So I have an ideal situation finally where I get to do both.
Get to do both.
So finally in a place where I'm just having a blast. Writing songs too all the time. With different people.
Sure.
You know, I've been writing a lot with a guy named Joe Bonamassa for his new album.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Beth Hart.
Nice.
She's really great, so yeah. I've really been enjoying that, too. So.
Wow. I love Beth Hart. Yeah,
she's, yeah, great. She's great.
So you leave Sacramento.
Yeah. I went to Lake Tahoe at that point.
Okay.
Because it was just up the road.
Did you run into Mac Davis?
He was there.
Yeah?
You know, actually, I saw a lot of acts there. That was really great part about living in Lake Tahoe. We saw a lot of bands come through there. In fact, I remember it was in, I think it was 74 or something, just before he took back off. Kenny Rogers was up there playing in the little tiny room up there at Harrah's. And he would come out and talk to everybody. I said, "Man, where have you been? We haven't seen you since, you know, the last
band
he had,
yeah.
the first edition, I think."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, you know, I've been recording. I just cut this new song called Lucille."
Oh.
And I said, "We're real excited about it." So, you know, like 6 months later, he owned the business. You know,
boom.
So it was great. But saw a lot of bands up there. And I played around that area, and it was real. And that's how I got my first record deal. There was a record executive up there from Warner Curb,
okay.
Who was up there with a guy named Dick Holler, who's a songwriter who wrote Abraham Martin and John. And Dick became my mentor, and really, and I still very good friends with Dick today. So, and that kind of happened. From there, we went down to Los Angeles, and I was, you know, they actually flew our band from Los Angeles. We were down there living for a little bit, and they flew the band out to Muscle Shoals to do our demos.
Really?
Different
over at
time
Fame?
In the business.
Yeah.
We were at Wishbone Studios.
Okay.
So that was a great experience.
Why did they do that? I mean,
those
studios,
you know, I have
available?
This kind of, you know, this voice or whatever, and they thought it was... They thought it would add to the record.
Southern swampy feel.
Yeah,
to
and it.
It
was great. We had a lot of fun. You know, we did. We lived on this house out there at Wishbone for about 2 weeks. We were, you know, a bunch of California kids from dry air stepping into the swamp. You know,
yeah,
couldn't breathe. So. But it was a great experience.
Oh man,
I was going to ask you, when you ended up in L.A., you started getting some cool soundtrack work. I actually was listening to the Teen Wolf song.
Yeah,
it was on the Teen Wolf. What was that music scene like in L.A. back then?
Well, you know, I was anything I could do to get work at that point. But I just got known around town. It's kind of, I did a lot of background vocals, and that led into one thing leads to another. In fact, I did the soundtrack to Teen Wolf and some other movie
Flesh
called
Flesh on Fire.
Flesh on Fire, a bunch of these movies. I really, one came up the other day. Somebody emailed me about one. I forgot all about it. I was like, oh, wow. one of the more interesting gigs I did at the time was... I had some fun gigs. One was working with Dustin Hoffman for a little bit out on Ishtar.
Yeah.
They had, you know, they were actually doing an album after the movie of serious songs, because the whole movie's about bad songs,
right,
which was kind of interesting, you know, movie, because you got a really great songwriter, Paul Williams, writing bad songs. So I think it was kind of a doomed from the start. it's a real cult favorite, though. But anyway, I loved it. I got to work with him for a couple of days out of David Foster's studio. But one of the other gigs I got was I got hired to sing all the English version of a couple of Julio Iglesias albums.
Really?
So they would bring me in to sing, you know, and I'd say I could knock the album out in about 3 hours and stuff. And he would listen because he couldn't speak English, and he would listen in one ear to the English version so he could cop it. But it was... So
and
was
he
like,
would just mimic the way you...
Well, no, he didn't mimic the way I sang, but he could at least, you know...
Get the words
version,
down.
You know, yeah. So that was an interesting...
Wow. Interesting.
And they were great. They were great guys. He wasn't there. I never met him. He wasn't there, but they were very Latin. And, you know, you were great. You're fantastic. Now leave.
Now leave. No one will ever hear this again.
$50. Go. Thank you. I got to go.
Wow. Well, let me back up a little bit. When you got your, I read that when you got your first record deal, you actually had to change, they changed your band name.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Talk about that, because it was with the house band, right?
We were the house band, which was, you know,
kind of clever play on words, yeah.
I think we were free beer for quite a bit. That would bring them in. Yeah, I think Foreigner was kind of happening at that point. It was all the prisoner, foreigner, killer.
Anything that ends with R.
Stalker, I don't know, with an ER kind of name. Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, it was doomed from the beginning. It was, you know, we were just a bunch of crazy kids.
But nice.
And anyway, I'm still friends with them. Stay in touch with some of them, and you know, it was good times. We played all around Lake Tahoe a lot. So. Yeah.
But you guys didn't put up a fight changing the name. That was.
Oh no, kid. I'm like, okay.
Sure.
Here's $50.
Yeah, here's $50. Okay. That was a great experience. We recorded at Wally Hyder's in Los Angeles. Dick Holler was around. I wrote some songs with Dick and some of the other guys. And a guy by the name of Phil Gernhardt was the producer who produced Abraham, Martin, and John and Stay and some other really big records. So that was our first. We had some great session guys kind of help us out from the Neil Diamond Band. And
oh, wow.
So we were we were like, and they flew us to Muscle Shoals, and we were Wally Hyder's in L.A. And so that was the happening studio right then. It was right across the street from the big RCA studio. So. And it was, we're very excited. They had us an apartment right on the beach there in Santa Monica. So,
oh, I hate that.
We were rock stars, you know.
And that, we probably won't hear any stories about that apartment.
No.
No,
no, no. Like, milk and cookies.
It's probably best.
That's the book.
That's the book. Oh, man. So you ended up coming to Nashville in the late 80s. And I'd read that you said that you started hearing stuff, and I know your producers were saying, hey, you should listen to some of this stuff. What was it? Who was grabbing your attention? What was it that got you to think, man, maybe I need to be there?
Well, I'd actually, after the band broke up, I wrote songs for a bit. I got a solo deal with Atlantic Records and made a rock record with them, with Gary Katz producing. And I was telling this story last night for some reason. Donald Fagen, at one point in the studio in New York, Donald Fagen was there visiting, because Gary Katz produced all the Steely Dan stuff. John Denver came down and visited in the studio. So I'm sitting there, and nobody took a picture, but this is God's honest truth. John Denver was there, and Donald Fagen, and we were all hanging out at my session for, you know, they were there for about an hour, and John played us some of his new record at that point. And this was all 1981.
Was this the Nightfly, what was the name of that album they had?
Well, you mean talking about
Donald Fagen?
Yeah, Steely Dan, yeah. But John Denver was playing his record.
Oh, good. Because
yeah,
so Donald Fagen had a solo album.
Yeah,
that
time. But Donald was always around because Gary and him were very good friends.
Okay.
You know, so, but that was an interesting experience. It was on Atlantic Records. So after that, that fell apart or something, whatever happened. I wasn't really.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because you mentioned that solo album. Project was kind of a growing experience.
It definitely
for you. So
was.
I was
growing.
Okay,
as they say. So I went through that experience and got through. I think it was about 1985 at that point. By the time it all washed up, and I got a publishing deal out in Los Angeles. I was just writing songs. That's when I was doing all the film stuff. 83 to about 86. I did a lot of film and commercials. I was singing jingles and I did a little acting. I was in a movie called Scenes from the Gold Mine, which was just a little bit part. So had a lot of fun. You know, you're in Los Angeles, you're in Rome, do what...
That's right.
Sure.
So, and then I remember watching the CMAs. And once again, country music was always part of my life. It just was. And a lot, you know, I love the Eagles. And to me, that was very country back. And Jesse Colin Young and all that stuff had that whole West Coast kind of thing. So I was watching the CMAs. I think it was 87. and just was inspired that night. And I remember some friends of mine, Josh Leo and Wendy Waldman, who I'd met in Los Angeles and knew out and was used to work with them out there, had moved out here and had a really good success with Fishing in the Dark,
mm-hmm.
with the Nitty Gritty Jerk Band. And I love that record. It sounded great. And the place was exploding. Dwight was taking off. Randy Travis was taking... The music out here was just... It was just this great, diversified, great bunch of artists taking off. So Steve Earle was doing great. So I thought, well, Wendy said, come out, you should definitely try this. So I went in the studio and cut some songs. I just thought, that night I started writing a song called Hard Times for an Honest Man. And worked on it for a couple of days. I went in and cut some demos that next week or so, took them into my publisher. She sent them out and to want Tony Brown out here. And he said, you know, come on out. So I jumped in my car and came out and never looked back.
Wow. Nice. All right. Well, we're going to pick it up there when we come back. We're here with hit songwriter James House, and you're listening to The Music Row Show. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter James House. That was cool. What was that we were listening to?
Bonnie
there?
Tyler.
Nice.
She cut a song that I wrote with Kyle Jacobs.
Very nice.
She sounds great.
She sounds great.
Have you, did you ever see that literal lyrics video of hers?
No.
On YouTube?
No.
I'll talk to you about that later. It's hilarious. Okay, so you come to Nashville, and what are your first impressions compared to the scene you'd been in?
Well, first of all, all the record companies were in houses.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I thought, this is awesome, you know, because it was pretty corporate, still is in Los Angeles at the time. And they were in little houses. It was great. You know, Warner Brothers was on 19th and in the corner. And so first of all, that was the first thing. The second thing was and it still is, the discipline of the songwriting here.
Right.
It's get up and let's write songs. You know, let's go. And that thing, it really changed everything for me, was that discipline. That's when I started having hits. Things started happening. Wouldn't show up at 1 o'clock and then, you know, take a break and we'll come back next week and let's get it done.
Right.
Let's get two a day. Let's go. You know, and that was the best thing. So.
How about the actual process itself? Was there anything that you changed about how you worked when you came here?
Well, they're just great songwriters, just poets. See, how did I change? They're just really great people to work with, mm-hmm. you know. It was fast. Country music is more storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's not you get to the point pretty quickly. You know, there is poetry involved, but it's less of a, it's more of a direct approach to the deal. And the title is a big part of it. Just where you're going to start off first, but. I just was amazed with the talent here. I remember I was going to go back just a minute when they flew us back to Muscle Shoals. We went to an In the Round in the party down. And, you know, we were from Los Angeles, California. We thought, okay, we could play a little bit. We go to this party. This guy named Mac McAnally was here.
Oh, yeah.
I walked out of there going, I got a lot of work to do. So, and that just gave me just a hint of what goes on down here. And, you know, so.
So you thought you'd come subject yourself to more of it.
Well, you got to surround yourself. You got to be around better people than you. And I still strive for that. I'm always looking to work with very talented. Somebody can teach me something.
So you've been a writer all along.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the records we had as a kid, even the Johnny Cash. I mean, of course, you know, Sacramento's close to Folsom. So
sure.
All those records, most of those guys were writing that stuff, Buck and the Beatles and Stones. So I thought you had to write to get a record deal. I mean, I thought, well, I better, you know, learn how to do this. So.
Yeah.
Well, what was it like for you then when you did transition from, you know, being a full-time artist to being a full-time writer? What was that transition like? What were the pros and cons?
I was all kind of mixed in because when I had hits, I was writing for me.
Right.
I wasn't writing for anybody else, and I still don't. I just write. So it's, you know, that's where I get to the heart of the song. So I mean, I'm trying to put my heart into it. I mean, you get to good things.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, that's where the good ones come. That's where they do for me anyway, and still do. So that's why I've always tried to been connected to my artist side, you know. I've just been lucky enough to have some other people want to record them too, so that's okay.
Well, and one of those is Broken Wing.
Yeah.
Huge hit. Huge hit. And just one of those, just, I can't imagine anybody else but her singing that song. But I'm curious, you were talking about getting to the point. You know, there's a story, getting to the point.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays, especially, what is it, 30 seconds before you have to have the chorus going? Three seconds before you get to the chorus.
The new rule
now.
Just came out.
New
it's
rule.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. But that song.
Wait, who wrote that rule?
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, you know, the Beatles started with choruses.
Yeah. A lot of times,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, that's a good rule.
They took care of that. But Broken Wing, a minute and 35 seconds before you get to that chorus. Was there pushback from publishers?
No. It was, that was written and recorded all in one day. Wow. And then I left and went back on the road. So, and I was, you know, I had the music going, and then Phil and Sam got there about 1. I started about 10. And they got there, and it all connected the way they had a lyric. It was one of those deals where by the end of 5 o'clock, we were done.
Wow.
You know, and then I left and went on the road. And then, you know, my phone started buzzing. I mean, this is getting good news all the time. You know, it's getting real good response and this and that. And then we heard Martina wanted it, and I said, oh, this will be great. So
nice.
I distinctly remember they handed me the record. I was writing for Sony at that point, and I got the record. I went and got my car, and I was going to pop it in. I'm driving down 16th Avenue. I had to pull over because it was just, I was like, oh, well, this is a game changer here, so.
Wow.
It was great.
No, good
great
for moment. You.
Still is. I mean, when she's on the road, I get friends who call from her shows. And they're holding her phone up on the high note. You know, they're holding phones.
Yeah.
Here she is.
Their phones could run out of batteries as long as she holds that note, though, you know?
Oh, man. Well, listen, we got a question from listener Michael over here on Facebook. He's from Reno, so he was he's saying small world.
Town.
So he's asking, how does a blues rocker like him living in Nashville get a blues rock cut living here? Did he make a mistake moving here?
Who, me?
No, him.
I don't know.
Pursuing the blues thing here in Nashville?
Listen, you've been drinking quite a bit out there, I'm sure. Yeah. So just settle down. You're going to be okay.
Simmer down.
You can't make a mistake living here. I don't think this is all about making music. And, yeah. Any town where you've got 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 people just writing songs, it's got to be, you're going to connect. So one of the things I did was just get out and connect with people, like-minded, and you just kind of network and go play. I was out every night at in the Rounds and the Bluebirds and wherever I could go.
But if your interest is specifically the blues and that's what you're writing and that's what you're trying to pitch, you can do that here.
You can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just... You know, it's not, most blues artists seem to write a lot of their own stuff.
That's true. That's
so, and you, what you want to do is kind of connect with, see if you can write with them. Mm-hmm. They'll listen to your stuff. I mean, people love to go listen to stuff on Facebook and it's easier for them. You know, you can go listen to a song and get to, you know, I know as an artist, I'll go check stuff out. If somebody asks me to, I will.
So, yeah.
I don't think you can go wrong in this town whatsoever. It's a music town. Sweet. And everybody's here from, you know, Ben Folds to Jack White. So, I mean, all the music is, this is a very diverse town.
Well, we'd love to hear something from you. You feel like playing something for us?
Okay. It's a little song I wrote just this morning.
Nice.
Recorded it. Martina cut it.
Hope you like it. It goes just a little something like this. Now, this is the one that just went number one after 19 years.
Nice.
And that is just astounding. You hear teardrops falling like rain on the rooftops. If you don't know what you're listening to, this is me missing you. You see lonely, clear skies turning stormy, lightning strikes and all you see is blue. Well, this is me missing you. And while you're gone, this is the only way
let you know your love is always safe. You feel heartbreak, distant thunder like an earthquake. And if you wonder why the earth moves, this is me missing. And while you're gone, this is the only way to let you know your love is always safe. You touch empty, reach in the darkness and don't find me. Then you'll know just what I'm going through. This is me missing you. This is me missing you. This is me missing you.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So 19 years, it becomes a dance hit in the UK. How does that happen?
Right. I don't know. And there's another one off that same record going up the charts. So.
Get out.
Right.
Did they remix it?
No, same record.
It's the same.
It's the exact same record.
Well, the line dancing is huge over there. Mm-hmm. So what's happened lately is that choreographers will create a dance for a song.
Okay.
And then that'll get popular around the country, and then it gets played in all the clubs, and it gets on their radios and stuff. So that's what's happened. So on that same chart is like the Mavericks and Toby Keith and a lot of, and then some British artists too. But that's how it's, I know.
Great. When I read that, I thought it had to be a.
I thought it was going to be like, you hear teardrops.
Something like that.
But
yeah.
It's just the song.
Wow. Right. It's the same record.
Well, yeah. You mentioned the Mavericks, and you have a song on their latest CD, Born to be Blue, which you were talking about the Martinez song, You Had to Pull Over. When I heard that song, I had to pull over.
Oh,
I was
thanks.
Listening. I was in Knoxville, and the independent station played it, and I was like, I actually pulled over and texted Raul and said, holy cow, what a great song.
Yeah.
So talk about writing that, and you've known those guys for a long
time. Yeah, no,
was it written for them specifically?
Raul came over. I hadn't seen him in a while. He'd been on the road. We've both been doing certain things a lot. I used to tour a lot with them in the 90s and hung a lot with them and wrote a lot of songs, and I think I had one almost every record. And they're doing the new record, and they just said, we want everybody around us who was around then. So he called me up and said, and Bob too was very, said, James, we want you around on the record again. So Raul just came over and he said, I've had this piece of music hanging around. Have you got anything, And I said, I got a title. So I got Born to be Blue, and he's got this song, and it was done in 15 minutes. I'll see you.
Are you kidding me?
That was one of those. Yeah.
Oh. Here's your $50. Get out.
Yeah,
$50.
You're good like that, kid.
No, it's great. And I played guitar on the record, and it was, nice. I played acoustic. So it was just a great experience. And they're just one of my favorite bands. I think it's their best album they've ever made.
Record.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. And he's singing better than ever. So
yeah, that's a great track.
Proud to be back working with them again.
Sweet. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we are coming back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter and recording artist James House. Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter James House, and that's his new project, Troubadour Kings.
Troubadour Kings.
A little more.
We got to stop Scott from dancing, so we're going to start talking that because it's freaking people out.
Oh, I love this
song. That's awesome. Troubadour Kings. So tell us about that project. Tell us how you got it started and why and all that good stuff.
Well, it was just because I thought, well, you know, why not? So
okay.
And I, all the guys had known Mike Bradford.
You've been playing with them all for years, right?
Yeah, Mike Bradford produced all the early Kid Rock stuff, and he wrote Follow Me for Uncle Cracker, and he's just one of, he's a world-class bass player. Started playing with Earl Klug when I think it was about 9.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Seriously, yeah. Detroit. Just, you know, just a certified great guy and awesome musician. So I was working on some tracks for the project, and I said, and I called him, I said, Mike, you mind playing bass on this? And he goes, I'd love to. I just sent it out. I put bass in, and he said, you know, anytime. So I said, well, you're in.
Yeah.
Okay, you're in.
$50.
Here's your $50.
Yeah, $75.
For you. Okay, yeah.
And then Lou Toomey is, I've known Lou for since I first moved to town. So he was first with Keith Whitley, and it was, I met him because Keith, we had the same management. I had the same management as Keith Whitley. And Keith had just passed away, and the whole band needed a gig. And I had about 2 weeks worth of shows coming up, and they said, would you like Keith's band? So that's how I met Lou and all those guys. So for 2 weeks, I had the greatest, saddest band in the world out there on 2 weeks. Wow. We were mourning him at the same time, but they were so good because they were playing every night with Keith, and it was a great band. And so I'd known Lou since then. And then he went off and played with, he was with Faith Hill for about 10 years and Brooks and Dunn for years and years. And he's just, it's one of my favorite. And the Troubadour Kings is also about guitars.
Yeah.
It's about electric guitars too. So it's my country. When I play country, I usually play acoustic guitar. This is where I get to play electric. So we get to have fun with the electric.
It sounds
guitar.
Like you crank it's, them you know, up in kid, the studio.
We do.
Yeah.
It's kids with loud guitars, you know?
Well, let's talk about writing that. And again, cause you've been in so many different types of music throughout the years, craft-wise and lyrically, how is writing for Troubadour Kings different for writing for The Row?
Yeah, well, it's not that much different, except it's you know, you can write. It's not
the stories don't have
it's
to
more
be
blues. It's more of a blues lyric, and it's, you know, you can be just a little more flippant. I don't know. You can. It's just when I wrote Sweet Linda. I had East of Eden because, you know, I grew up in Sacramento, so Monterey is very close,
right.
And Salinas and all that stuff. So it was just East of Eden was open, so I was looking at East of Eden, and we used to go down there a lot to Salinas and stuff. So that's how that story poured out. And you can write about anything you want. You know, there's only one rule of music, and that's to be good. You know, so there's no box with rock and roll. There's just no box. I mean, country definitely has its parameters. You know, at least it used to. I dig what the artists are doing today too. So, but it was just, it's a fun way, liberating way to sing and write, and so, and you know, and I can,
yeah.
It, you know, there's only, if people like it, I'll keep doing it. You know, if they don't like it, I'll keep doing it anyway.
I'll keep doing it.
I just drive my family crazy, but they're used to it. So.
Nice.
One more thing, if I can, about the Troubadour Kings, the videos.
Right.
That you did. If you go to TroubadourKings.com, right?
Yeah.
Cool videos.
Thanks.
How did you guys put those together?
You know, I just was getting permission, and I'd go and find some. I love animation. Mm-hmm. And they can tell a story. Actually, the one with Sweet Linda is just, I was like, well, let's find out 60s dancers, 60s go-go dancers. And I happened to find that footage, and nobody was claiming that. I thought, well, I'll just kind of, you know, put some music to it. And I've been looking for the owners. Nobody knows where that footage came from. It was somewhere in Germany. And it just looked great for the, you know, for,
yeah.
I'm actually, it's one of those internet kind of deals, you know. I'm here, you know.
you're going to get a phone call from
some guy
with a German accent.
I'd love to.
We've
looked, I've reached out to everybody. But, you know, until then, we're just, you know, putting music. And I give credit to everybody that's involved with stuff. But that's how I do it. And, you know, I like doing film editing stuff. So I put it on my computer and cut them together. And, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the real reason we brought you to be on the show tonight. That's my mom in those videos, and that's some home footage.
God bless her.
Yeah. So we're going to need to talk a little bit. No, seriously. We're here with hit songwriter James House, and we'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show. Don't do
justice to the way I feel tonight. I swore I wouldn't cry again, but then again I just might. Something about yesterday looks sweeter through the years. Sometimes I want to go back and take back.
Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter James House. Love that.
I wrote that with Dean Miller.
Dean Miller.
Right.
So. Cool. What's the name of that track?
Days Gone By.
Days Gone By. Very nice. Wow. So one of the things we talked about earlier is that you actually just launched a record label, too. I mean, you're multifaceted. So what,
well,
what prompted that? Especially, you know, in today's climate.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I know it's crazy, isn't it? It's to do it in this today's climate. But I always come back to why I do this.
Okay.
And I mean, music has been the driving force of my life since I can remember. You know, it has that power to lift and to entertain, to connect people. And, I have to keep finding a way to do this. And so it's, if the opportunity came up to put the Troubadour Kings out, and this other artist I'm really crazy about named AV Super, super crazy about him. It's great stuff. And then we're actually doing this country record that, because of the hit going up in England, and then we're looking at some other artists too. So it's an exciting time. I'm very grateful.
Nice.
I have to back up a little bit, because during the break. And our listeners, during the break is always the coolest part of the show. You guys miss so much, but you were talking about that song becoming a big hit in England, and you had no idea. And all of a sudden, people just started calling you for talk about that.
Yeah, we started getting emails for interviews. I don't know, about 2 months ago, like. Hey, how are you doing? You know, I'm good. Thank you.
This is like some magazine or something.
No,
you
it was just fans. Oh, you know, and it was fans, and then it was a magazine, and I'm like, okay, thank you, good to see you. And then all of a sudden, I get one that says, "By the way, your song is number one this week on the dance charts in the UK." And I went, "Okay, really? Thank you." And they'd love to talk to you at the magazine about and the chart people would like to see what you're doing. So, emailed them back. Started a conversation, and they sent the chart over, and we saw it, and so I could, and I posted it up. I sent it to my mom,
see, even.
I said, "Mom, see." And so I'm on the cover of the magazine this month in February, and we did an interview with them, and another song from the same album's going up the charts. So, like I said, we jumped in. I was thinking about doing a Best of James House, or if you can call it that. I always wanted to do covers of my own songs, you know, Broken Wing and Ain't That Lonely, and In a Week or Two. And
that's a great idea.
One of my songs, I always like the Warren Brothers cut called King of Nothing.
Yeah.
So that, I always wanted to do some songs that I'd never got a chance to cut, and plus some new stuff. So we just did that, and we're in the middle of mixing that right now. So we're going to send it over to the folks.
Now, do you work any of that kind of material into the Troubadour King?
It's kind of tough. It's like when Star Rockin', I probably do some more of, you know, Ain't That Lonely Yet somewhere in the middle of the show. That seems to, the rockers seem to like that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that song, you
know,
actually.
Yeah. For some reason, the rock guys, and, you know, hey, man, you know, it's cool.
Yeah,
so I don't really like country, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So
right.
Anyway, I usually end up playing that show.
Well, talk since you mentioned that song, talk about "Ain't That Lonely Yet," which was a hit for Dwight Yoakam, and how you got it to him and all.
Right,
that.
I was working with Kostas Lazaridis, who's great, great songwriter, and written a bunch of hits, and we'd been working on another song for a couple of hours. We were writing here in town at Polygram at that point. And the song wasn't really going anyplace, so we stopped. Usually, you know, when you're writing, you pretty much get out of business. You don't talk a lot. You do in the beginning, but you pretty much kind of get to work. So we took a break, and we started talking. He was asking me about it. He goes, "So you he was asking me about an old girlfriend of mine." And he goes, "You guys getting back together?" And I said, "No, man, I ain't that lonely yet." And he goes, "Well, we should write that."
Yeah.
And that was done in about 20 minutes.
Kind of. Wow.
So we put that on a cassette right on the spot, if anybody remembers cassettes.
Yes.
And he was scheduled to write with Dwight the following week. So he played the cassette for Dwight. And Dwight just took it and ran with it and made it, you know, an unbelievable record. So
We have some time. I'd love to hear one more song.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll play that one. It was more
sweet.
It was more of a ballad when we wrote it, so I'll play that version.
All right.
We got volume. We got guitar.
Yeah, good. We're good.
You keep calling on the telephone. You say you're all alone. Girl, that's too bad. And you keep leaving notes stuck on my door. I guess you're hungry for some more. Oh, that's real sad. 'Cause I ain't that lonely, yeah. I ain't that lonely, yeah. And after what you put me through, I ain't that lonely, yeah. Once there was this spider in my bed. I got caught up in her web of love and lies. She spun her chains around my heart and soul, never to let go. But I survived. 'Cause I ain't that lonely, yeah. I ain't that lonely, yeah. And after what you put me through, I ain't that lonely, yeah. Nothing left you can do to try and bring me. Everything you do just brings me down. But don't you know that I ain't that lonely, yeah. I ain't that lonely, yeah. After what you put me through, I ain't that lonely.
What a great song.
Nice.
Great song.
Man.
Let's get all the plugs out of the way, because February is a big month
big
for you,
month.
Man. You got a lot going on. You got a new album coming out.
Yeah, Troubadour Kings is coming out January 20th. It goes to radio, mm-hmm. and it'll be out on the 1st of February in iTunes and everything.
And so people can go to iTunes. They can also go to troubadourkings.com.
Right. And we'll be giving a free track away on there right around the 1st of February.
Right.
So we'll make some noise about that. So
excellent. And then what else happens in February?
I think we're going to be playing over 3rd and Lindsley. I wouldn't swear to it, but we'll announce that date. We'll find out tomorrow about it. I'll come back to your site
right,
and
yeah.
TroubadourKings.com or Facebook.
If we can be there at all,
we'd love
to.
To
be there, yeah.
We're just trying to get all the logistics together.
Sure.
Cool. Our other group on the label, AV Super Sunshine, comes out January 27th. So you can go look at his site at avsupersunshine.com. And then we'll be releasing the James House Country record sometime right about then, too, late in the month in February. We're not going to go to radio. We're just going to put it out for folks who might be.
And that's you kind of just doing a lot of the songs that you've had cut by
other
artists?
Yeah, I cut In a Week or Two, that was a hit for Diamond and Rio, did a version of that. And this song, Broken Wing,
yeah,
King of Nothing, that the Warren Brothers have recorded.
Nice.
And about 6 brand new songs. So
great.
And I actually did a song called Here's to You that I cut off. It was cut off on MCA Records when I was on there in 1990, and I just wanted to redo it. I always loved the song. I wrote it with Costas, and so that's one of my favorites on the record.
Wow. All right.
Excellent.
I can't wait.
I have, do you have more questions?
No, you go for it.
You sure?
Yeah, we got a whole minute. Use it. Use it wisely.
The Beach Boys?
Yeah, oh yeah, those guys.
Holy cow. Right. What haven't you done? You recorded with the Beach Boys.
I did.
He did Little Deuce Coupe with the Beach Boys, Katrina. Look at that.
Wow.
Yeah, you're a fan. Aren't they great? Yeah, they were great. And there was, I went out on tour with them and did about 20 shows with them. And we opened for them. And then they would bring me up on stage for the car medley. Because I did Deuce Coupe.
The car medley.
Yeah, because I've got a lot of them. And then I'd get the finish up with California Girls. It was a great experience. If you want to get a kick, you can Google James House, The Beach Boys, David Letterman. They're still up on YouTube. And that was
sweet.
And Brian was there, so
yeah,
nice. It was a lot of fun. Carl was a great guy. And it was, every once in a while, I've been around some people that when they sing, it's a force of nature. And I happened to be in a studio about this size, which is me and my manager and the Beach Boys, and I got to hear them sing a cappella in my room.
Oh
and
my
Brian
gosh.
Singing, and I was, blown away, to say the least.
Well, thank you so much for spending the hour with us. We'd love
thank
it. JamesHouse.com, JamesHouseMusic.com.
JamesHouseMusic.com.
And go check it out, JupiterKings.com. We'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.
Way to go.